Microdosing was so, so yesterday. We're macrodosing now. At least, my guest today is... What do you get when you mix? Hand drum playing, psychedelics, self-realization, and Sir Mix-a-Lot? Isn't it obvious? It's today's episode of Open Loops. Your conscious mind is now canceled, which is great, because I'm speaking to you. Your unconscious mind is now tuned in to its favorite late-night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein, Conversations That Bend. Hello, everybody. So wonderful to have you. I am, of course, Greg Bornstein, your host, consciousness disruptor, cultural hypnotist, chief looper, curator of experience. I don't know. I explained all that stuff in the very early episodes. Very early. It was fun back then. This guest today brought me back to those days because, similar to me, he started his podcast as an audiobook talking about his journey with psychedelics and spiritual awakening, recovering from addiction and suicide. Very interesting stuff. We'll get to that in a little bit. What exactly is an open loop? I'll tell you some other time. The goal on this show, of course, is to challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and allow you to step into the highest version of yourself. We love that. We love stepping into self in the age of AI in the metaverse, where self-realization is totally just not about to matter at all. Why not self-actualize? Yeah, 30 minutes. Go ahead, self-actualize, and then we'll plug you into the matrix. But then it just reminds me of this video someone showed me last night where... this person came, it was a TikTok video, which I'm ashamed to admit I watched, where this guy had two pillows and he was looking up and pondering, and the caption said, "Do you realize that when you have one pillow on top of another pillow, the bottom pillow is acting as a pillow for that pillow?" Kind of a trippy idea, huh? That's kind of what I feel about plugging into the matrix. We're already in a matrix, so you're going to add a matrix on top of it, and then when are we just going to get platonic again? And not platonic in the we're not going to have intimate relations kind of way. I mean Plato in the cave and the copy of the copy, which is interesting because platonic was, well, it comes from Plato, which means, do we think Plato just didn't get a lot of female attention? Maybe Plato was friend-zoned permanently, and because he never had a chance to explore his sexual side, he came up with all these philosophical ideas. Poor guy. Thanks for Atlantis. All right, so look, today's episode is all about finding the God spark. That's the name of Antonio D's podcast. In addition to being a talented hand drum player, he decided to share his tales of consciousness expansion medicine. Yes, yes. They do not bring you that through capsule. I've tried. I've never tried psychedelics, which is the craziest part of all this, and probably why my hypnosis experience parallels psychedelic conversations in the sense that it seems that these experiences come out of nowhere. There's something inside of us that the unconscious, you might call it superconscious, that is aware of far beyond what we can see in everyday reality. Antonio's tapped into that, and I really like how down-to-earth this guy is. I mean, this was a guy that was going, he still can do a two-step as a cowboy. I mean, that's at least what I've read on him. But yeah, he was going to these bars and, you know, just kind of drinking, picking up women, all this stuff. And then apologize for the drawl that came through. It's my actor self. And all of a sudden, when he was at his lowest, decided to tap in to something deeper. Well, you can listen to the rest of what happens. Now, before we get to that, I just want to let you know, if you yourself are looking to have a mind-bending, consciousness-expanding experience, I am booking people for hypnosis sessions. I have a Calendly link in the show notes. Feel free. Get a half-hour call. I'll even do some hypnosis with you on that call. So free consultation, but definitely looking to work with people to help them get past their problems or just go on a journey of their own. Could be spiritual. The other thing is Open Loops. You like this show? Please make sure to go to ratethispodcast.com/openloops and leave a review. Even a couple words helps get this crazy kooky content out there. Yes, I love doing this show, and I love having people like you listen to it and having people hear it, because we need to listen to alternative points of view, and we need to get more in tune with self. Look at what's happening in the world right now. We need to get in tune with self, because once we get in tune with ourselves, we get in tune with love. And what the world needs now is me not getting a copyright suit. So, here we go. You're going to enjoy this one. This was very, it reminds me of some of the early interviews I did with my friends. It's just a real down-to-earth conversation with somebody that is, he's seeking answers. So am I. Here's Antonio D. of Finding the God Spark. Here we go, Antonio DeCunto, the host of Finding the God Spark podcast, joins me because, well, look, we followed each other on Instagram, and he was posting some very interesting, mind-bending stuff, and then I would post things, and we'd kind of reply to each other, and at a certain point, I said, wait a minute, who is this God Spark guy? What is he doing with this podcast? What is the message here? What is the perspective? And I invited him on. It involves a lot of mind-bending things. I believe there's an addiction recovery story in there. Maybe not. I know there's psychedelics involved. I want to get closer to the God Spark myself. So we're going to get into all of that. Antonio, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, before we started, I mean, look, I asked you, hey, can we say your full name? And you said the secret's out. What's the secret? What were you not letting people know about yourself in terms of your experiences as of late?
Well, so I say that because my uncle has a very you know, me and my uncle both have a very unique last name. So if he sees DeCunto somewhere, he's going to know it's me doing this. And, you know, he's a retired police officer. He was head of narcotics when he was in the police force. Yeah, this would be a very interesting event to see that I'm doing this right now.
Is the idea that because he was in narcotics, and that is really the thing, right? We hear about the war on drugs. At a certain point, they were all categorized as bad. If it wasn't alcohol, and not even that was great, but still, if it wasn't alcohol, if it wasn't cigarettes, marijuana onwards is a narcotic. Therefore, it's under this category. Is that the idea that there's still a stigma around even these plant-based drugs that hasn't penetrated a certain sector of our populace?
Yeah, and I would definitely select, like my early experiences with them, because I had some experiences when I was probably about 16 to almost 21, and it was much different then. I was just using it as a party drug, and my uncle became aware of that because at one point I had had a suicide attempt by trying to overdose on ecstasy. And basically when that happened, I thought I was done with them completely. And then this odd character I work with for some reason came into my life a couple times. And the second time he came into my life, he offered me a hit of LSD. And yeah, I was kind of in the, I was extreme alcoholic at the time that that happened. And, but even then I said, well, there's got to be a reason that I've encountered this guy twice at separate times in my life. And now he's offering me this. And, so I decided I'd take it. And that was the beginning of my adulthood psychedelic use, I would say, as far as like taking everything more from a mature standpoint and actually looking at it as a great therapy tool instead of just a drug to have fun with.
Yeah, and now when you say that there has to be a reason that this person came in to your life, I mean that tells me that you, at some level, at least in that moment, often happens when people are at their lowest point, believe that there was some kind of intelligent order to things. I mean, were you religious at all? Did you believe? Were you a skeptic? I mean, what was your orientation about reality at that point in your life or before that point up to then?
Well, I would say that most of my thinking up to that point stemmed from my experience with suicide. When I tried to overdose, the plan was to take 10 at once, 10 pills of ecstasy at one time. And I ended up only doing five to start because I figured I'd have one last good party night. And then I would take the 10 to finish, the rest of it to finish me off. But taking that five gave me extreme hallucinations, which is uncommon with ecstasy. Usually it's a LSD thing. And all of the hallucinations, if you want to call them that, I consider that the big spiritual experience that changed my mindset actually was it was all suicide based basically. I had a unplugged television, and at the time, I don't know if you remember Who Wants to Be a Millionaire,
Oh,
but
yeah.
Regis Philbin popped on the TV screen. The TV was unplugged, and he was just looking and saying, "Is this your final answer? Is this your final answer? Is this your final?" And he kept repeating that.
This was your hallucination.
Right. So then a little while later, I was, jamming out, having a good time with a radio station called Wild 98.7 in Florida. And they were basically R&B, hip hop. And on Friday and Saturday nights, they played EDM music, which is perfect for the ecstasy crowd. And they had no business playing any type of, heavy metal song or rock band or anything like that. And while I was listening to that station, all of a sudden a song by Papa Roach came on. It's called Last Resort. It's all about suicide. And I figured maybe my foot had bumped the dial while I was dancing around or something. So I tried to change it, and all the other stations were static. The only song I could hear was that one. And, you know, I began to think, I'm like, okay, I guess this is part of the process. You know, God's here with me, and he's, you know, showing me basically the decisions I'm making, or, you know, I don't know. I looked at it as almost God trying to, you know, give me a way out in my last moments or something like that, to make me realize that this was a bad decision. And so the final thing came, I was playing around with glow sticks, and as I was playing around with them, this white strip started developing in between the glow sticks, and then a video camera moved from my right side over to my left side, and it started playing, like, basically my life flashing before my eyes on that film strip. And it was past, present, future. Didn't care for the future result whatsoever. Immediately ran to the bathroom and tried to throw up all the ecstasy that I had taken. That really didn't work, obviously. It'd been a few hours. So then when I came out of the bathroom, the walls were just littered with demonic faces, and there was a demon figure sitting on a throne with a big smile on his face, just kind of following me around the room. So I threw on the lights, got in the car, turned myself into the cops. And that's, you know, I basically didn't want to commit suicide anymore, but I knew I didn't have a really realistic way out getting back on my feet. So that's when I had to bite the bullet and go kind of crawling to my uncle and saying, hey, can you help me out? You know, this and this happened. And unknown to me, he had some inheritance money from my mother and grandmother passing, kind of locked away and hidden from me. But he's like, yeah, I'll use your inheritance money to get your car out of impound and pay your rent. And, you know, but you got to get a job and kind of pull your head out of your ass. And, you know, I'm not going to be here to take care of you. So, yeah, that was a big moment for me, where I started kind of thinking that, you know, there was something else, maybe, you know, God, the creator, was a real thing. I ended up doing the prayer to Jesus and accepting Jesus and all that, got baptized. And then kind of broke away from the church because I saw a lot of hypocrisy amongst the members, and said, okay, maybe it's not necessarily that I need to go to a church. Maybe it's just that I need to believe, and my personal belief, you know, I'll just go with what I'm guided, basically. Like, you know, everything is guided from this point on. You know, I don't have to go around a congregation and live somebody else's idea of faith.
Yeah. So there are a lot of interesting questions here, which include, I mean, even just from a purely scientific perspective, the effects of ecstasy. Did you ever investigate if that kind of hallucination happens? I mean, is there a possibility that this, taking these pills, in this way, yes, it caused the hallucination, but it was a rare event to have an experience like that rather than just dying. I mean, I'm curious about the overdosing on ecstasy and how it typically goes for people versus your moment in time.
Well, I just thought it was, I thought it would be like the for sure. You know, I never dealt with anything like heroin or any of the other stuff. So in my mind, that was the thing that was going to do it. But, you know, What I know now is that apparently you can mix something called sassafras, and that'll give you a very visual experience along with the feel good thing that usually MDMA gives you by itself.
And yes, we are not recommending this necessarily to everybody listening, but in terms of drug recipes, I don't want that to be the idea here. But no, I mean, the thing that's intriguing, Antonio, is that, you know, I'm in a world where I have definitely discussed drugs and the possibilities of psychedelics with people. You hear it time and time again. There's always some story, which I don't know if it's real or not, but everybody tells me it's real. Even I probabilistically, if you're in a group of three people and you bring up psychedelic trips as some medicinal thing that can really make a difference, one out of three of those people is going to say, yeah, but I know someone, it really messed them up permanently. So my question is about that. How do we, why didn't the ecstasy in that moment take you to the worst, absolute, irrecoverable place where maybe you didn't commit suicide, but you became even more stuck in a paranoid negative? I mean, it raises that question. Do you have any thoughts on that? Do you look at it as almost a miracle in a way that you were able to turn yourself in? I mean, what is your take?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I do hear a lot of stories about that. I don't know anybody personally that's experienced that level of, you know, going off the deep end. But yeah, I think, I don't know. I think I'm definitely a unique minded individual. And I think that, I think that's what God has allowed my, I don't know, he's allowed me to be durable to that type of thing. You know, the, I'm sure the, like the most impactful psychedelic experience I had. So I was carrying around my mother's ashes for a long time, and I got back into psychedelics, and I went to a place in Colorado, did a hike out there, and I knew immediately, I said, this has got to be the place to spread my mom's ashes finally. And so I decided to add LSD to the mix of that. So I spread my mom's ashes, took about three hits of LSD, and the trip started off very intense, to where I had to hide behind a rock off the trail and just, you know, lean against the rock, and I didn't want anybody to see me and know that I was there. So I snapped out of that, and I thought the trip was over, and I'm like, okay, I slept through the whole thing, didn't really get anything, that's fine. I started back down the trail, and it wasn't over. I was just experiencing a wave of LSD. Like sometimes they go in waves where you don't feel anything, and then all of a sudden it hits you again. And I was walking along the trail, and it started hitting me again. And I looked off to my left-hand side and saw kind of like a holographic shield wall, so to speak. And for some reason, I just didn't like it being there. So I went over to, you know, break it down. And I put my hands in it, kind of like an elevator, and pried it open like elevator doors. And it shattered. And I walked through that shattered, you know, it was still shattering around me, but I was walking through that space. And all of a sudden, I just felt so light and carefree. It was like all the stress had just left me. And I walked a little ways, and I still had a little bit of my mother's ashes, and I reached this spot that looked like it had been old, you know, campfire for hikers or whatever. And I spread the rest of the ashes there and just like crashed down on the back and looked up to the sky. I was like, well, thanks, Mom, for leading me to this location. And, you know, it's interesting to know that it's always been this easy just to let go. And then I had this feeling that I needed to be shown something. And the only way I could progress to be shown this special event, special place, was if I parted ways with all my material possessions that I had with me at that time.
Right.
So I started with my phone. I like smashed it against one of the trees and gave it a big toss in the forest. Pulled the car keys out of my pocket. Thanked the car for all of its years of loyalty. Gave it a kiss, tossed it in the forest. Stripped down almost naked. And then started walking. I didn't know where I was going, but looking at myself walking, I can look back at that moment as like, you definitely had a purpose in your steps. So it was like you were walking somewhere, even though I didn't know where. So, I got pretty far. It was like this creek bed, and then there was a path, and you know, it was like I was being told that the only way you can go up this path is if you are completely free of everything. You're not bringing anything from this world on this path. So I got completely naked, got rid of my water bottle, and I crossed this riverbed and stood in front of the path. And then I was almost as if I was looking in a mirror and seeing myself turn into a beast, a wild animal, you know, with fangs and hair. And I started crawling on all fours up this path, and I reached a rock face, started climbing this rock face, which was weird for me because I'd always been, you know, afraid of heights. And, you know, this just didn't make any sense. And I was thinking, I'm like, ooh, man, I'm a completely different person. And I started thinking I had been out in the wilderness for months, and you know, I thought I was developing calluses on my feet, and because I could feel this thing on my feet, but I couldn't feel pain. It was just kind of like a tightness. So I thought they were like becoming armored. Turns out my feet were actually turning to hamburger meat. And I was actually doing a lot of damage to my feet, but I didn't find that out until the day later. But yeah, I was climbed a couple rock faces, climbed some trees, ended up digging a hole in the dirt, staying overnight. Well, right before I dug the hole though, I started doing battle with a old tree trunk, and I was punching it and elbowing it and headbutting it, and like every piece of the tree that went away, it was some sort of attachment that was you know, basically holding me back. And yeah, so I dug a hole for myself, buried myself in dirt to keep warm, woke up the next morning, and I don't know, I felt there was something else I needed to do, but I became so extremely dehydrated. All I could hear was the roaring of the stream down below. And so I said, okay, I got a hell of a story to tell people. I'm just going to go back down. I choose life. I'm going to drink water. And so I went down there, drank my water, and I sat on a rock just thinking, well, what the hell am I going to do now? Cause like all my stuff's gone. I have no idea where I am in the forest right now. And I said, okay, here's my plan in my head is like, I'm gonna walk down this trail stark naked. And if I encounter somebody, I'm just gonna say I was like kidnapped and beaten or something like that. And, my car is in the parking lot, but I don't know where I'm at and all this. But as I started to leave that area where I was drinking water, I noticed something sitting on the ground, and I went over and it was my shirt. And then I said, okay, so I'm in the exact area that I threw everything away. All I have to do is find my stuff. I'll just stay in this area and find everything. And next, I found my pants, my water bottle, and I said, okay, you know what? If I find my keys, I'll start down the trail again and head home. That'll be good enough for me. And I'll come back to this location. Just, remember where everything's at. And I'll look for my other stuff. So that's what I did. I didn't have my shoes or anything, just shirt, pants, and car keys, water bottle. And so the night, about a week and a half or so, I returned out there, found everything else except my wallet, which interestingly enough, it was just getting ready to kick in a winter season. And then I went back out there in July in the summer on my birthday, and I ended up finding my wallet in that location, just right out in the open. And it still had a hundred and some dollars in it, all my credit cards and ID and all that. It had a little bit of forest mold, I guess you could say. But
Right.
that was a big moment for me. I'm like, okay, any no one can tell me that like God hasn't been looking out for me my entire life, even though I've been a stubborn little kid. He's had, infinite patience for me, and he's always had my back. So,
Wow. Do you then, when you say God's spark, what do you mean exactly?
basically, I mean finding the God spark that we all have, and you just have to find it and find a way to ignite it and believe in it, that you are powerful, and that you were made, by God, whatever you want to call it, if you want to call it God or, the source or whatever label you want to put on it.
Do you believe that finding this spark has I mean, look, when I think of spark, I think of a fuel for something, an inspiration, something that, well, some might even go as far as saying it's what you're meant to do in this world. I mean, look at you. You've come from recovering from suicide to recording an audiobook, putting out a podcast. You're a musician. I mean, do you is this you mentioned that you already did think differently than others and you had a creative spirit, but I'm curious how feeling this connection to the divine has made you do things you might have not done before.
Yeah, I mean, even I think once, when I started doing the audiobook podcast thing, it was definitely almost as if I was feeling that I had this compulsion, like I actually had something I needed to do, that I was feeling that eventually this will resonate with certain people out there, and you're doing this for a good reason. And I would say the same came about with the music situation. I always stayed away from instruments. I didn't think music was going to be my thing. I just thought it was artistic talent. You know, I could draw, but I couldn't play music. Then I came across this instrument called a handpan, fell in love with it. And, you know, sometimes I feel that I'm actually playing for the divine. And,
yeah,
it's, well, it's a pretty incredible, it's only been, what, three or so years now? And it feels, I mean, it feels like I've been doing it for a while, even though I've only been doing this a short time. But, you know, this feels like it. I mean, it just feels like I'm doing what I need to be doing now, so.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like, I mean, it really does look like a flying saucer. That yep. hand pan, which is fascinating in itself. And I've seen people play this before. Definitely, often they look like somebody that may have engaged in drugs or is more spiritually inclined. You're playing for the divine. That's interesting. That's interesting. What do you imagine that looks like for yourself? I mean, would you go on the road and tour with this thing? Are you, do you want them to speak to you without needing the drugs? What is your big vision right now? If you have any, maybe you don't.
Yeah, as far as the music, I just got something, I guess you, under control, I guess you could say. There were so many ideas in my head about what I should do. And, I pretty much resorted to just focusing on getting what I need to make a good home studio setup.
Oh, great.
And then actually concentrate on making like quality music, because I went to Sedona, Arizona for a vacation, and I took the handpan on some of the hikes with me, and felt I was, you know, given the birth of a musical piece, and I've been working on that, and it's, you know, I feel I have to get that out. I have to get that, you know, out of my system, almost to, just to make room for something else so that I can move on and do another piece. But yeah, I think the best way to do that is a good home studio setup and get you know, good quality product.
Now, I want to return to something you said that I think is very interesting and relates to the journey of the artist in a way, in the sense of this getting something out of your system. I do believe that there is a relationship between artists and, just absolute torture. And I don't really... It's sometimes very complex. It's sometimes very simple. I tend to make things just automatically more complex in my head. That's just the way I'm wired to overthink and overanalyze. But I wonder, do you believe that the any bit of the fact that you weren't doing this before, that you weren't making music, that you weren't sharing these experiences. Often people say that when things get so internalized and you have no one to talk to, that leads to things like depression and suicide. So I'm wondering, in your journey, I mean, what do you think it was? Was this always inside of you? Do you feel in these drugs and experiences let it out? Curious about your take on the overall artistic journey in all of this.
Well, I think that explains a little bit more of my theory of like finding that, you know, the God spark in you. Because I mean, before that stuff, I was an alcoholic, and I thought I'd like, that's just the way life became. Was like drinking all the time and going to country bars, and yeah, I was, you know, good at the two-step dancing thing and you know, wooing women, but you know, when I tried that LSD again, it kind of turned everything on its head. It's like, okay, I've been doing wrong. That's not life. You know, the drinking all the time, that's not the way it should be. You always thought about writing life experiences, and actually the when the lockdowns first started, that's when I actually started writing stuff. I didn't so it was almost like a really great thing for me. I hate to say that because I know it's
I started this show during the lockdown. It absolutely got me more in touch with being real to myself and my values. But yeah, no, I know what you're saying. So the lockdown was a catalyst event for you.
Yeah, it was just I didn't want to take the typical approach that a lot of people did. It was like, oh, I'm gonna work out more and blah 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 blah. And it was like, well, I already work out, I'm already a healthy guy. I wanted to do something different. And it became like a nagging, almost like you start writing. And it was just a thing in my head and it wouldn't go away until I started writing. And then when I did, I was like, oh, I should have done this much sooner. This is great.
It feels good, right? Yeah, it raises a lot of questions about, I'm trying to think about imagining you with these guys back at the bars now, in the sense, well, two questions about this, which is, one is about, relating to them now, which I'll get to a little bit later, but let's stay here with the God spark idea for a second. You definitely hear about, I know for myself, I've been in a position where I'm doing work that doesn't feel affirming, that drowns my energy. Yes, all the stuff around the work is good, right? You might have a group of friends and you're making money and you feel more secure, but something inside of you is just nagging and wanting to get out. And to imagine that at even, and look, I'm coming from this from the perspective of somebody being in New York City, like to think about, an unhappy trucker as an example, or someone living in a different part, or just, someone in all different experiences of life. And the problem is, of course, not everybody has the opportunities to, there are things structurally, I believe, that force people to often live in, is there a middle class anymore? It's poverty, and people don't really always have the opportunity to have these defiant great resignations. I'm going to quit my job. And, but I think that's a really sad thing, because I wonder how many people are doing work out there that they just kind of found themselves doing, and they numb their experiences by turning to drugs and alcohol on the weekend socially, because they're truly denying their God spark, which wants to do something else. I don't know. From the people that you are hanging out with in bars, from your friends and the people who you were close with, do you think there is a little of the artist in everyone that is often denied because of the way society and work keeps people boxed in?
Yeah. So, one of the movies that always, has stuck with me over the years, is The Truman Show.
Yes.
And, I've gotten in the habit of looking at a lot of people like Truman's best friend in the movie. You know, they almost prevent you. It's almost like their goal is to prevent you from finding the God spark.
Yes.
You know, they do, like every time you say, I'm going to do this. And they have a rebuttal like, oh, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't take that chance. That's too risky. You shouldn't go this place. You shouldn't, try this. You shouldn't try writing. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do that. And even when back, I was born and raised in Florida, and I didn't leave there until I was 30. And now my best friend at the time, we would pretty much do the same thing during our days off, which was play a crap load of video games. And we're always talking about, how much we wanted to get out of Florida and all this, and it was just talk, talk, talk. And one day I was getting out of my car. I had we were gonna do a little LAN party, and I was getting my computer tower out of the back seat, and I just stopped and looked at this computer tower, and I said, I got to get out. If I got to be the one to go, I'm leaving, and it became a thing. Like, I sold everything I had, and left Florida, and I said, I'm getting out of the state, and that's all there is to it, and I took all my savings and just went to ended up spending about a month on the Appalachian Trail, and then ended up taking a plane out to Georgia, Montana. And yeah, I only got through like the Georgia section of the Appalachian Trail, but left Georgia and then went to Montana, stayed out there for a few years. And just that change in the type of people I was encountering every day gave me a new outlook on life. People were so much different, and seeing mountain scenery instead of shopping malls, and all you could see in Florida when I was driving were ways to spend money. And
Yes. I was just in Miami for my sister's wedding. Yes.
yeah, it's just consumerism all over the place. If you're not spending money, you're not doing much.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, obviously you mentioned your uncle, but to get to the second part of my question, I certainly know that as I've gone into more of these topics, Antonio, there someone my friend Omar Fazi, who hosts a great show called Watchers Talk, covers a lot of similar ground that I do. He calls it the railroad effect. Some people just end up kind of going off on a set they're on a separate track and they're staying on that track, that conscious state of mind, and it becomes, even though it's better for you overall, you may feel the God spark inside of yourself, it becomes harder for you to relate to people you were once close with. I mean, yeah, have you experienced other kind of, I guess, casualties of ascension in this, people who've gone by the wayside? And have you been surprised at all by some people that have said, oh my gosh, Antonio, yeah, I did know you had this in you. And I can't wait to see where you're going next. What has that been like?
I've had to leave a couple friends of mine, and it was hard in a way because
It is.
I was like, why can't you see what I see? Why can't you see things the way I do? And that leads a lot of people to say, well, the psychedelics are messing with you, with your brain chemistry in a bad way. And I'm like, I can't even see it as a bad in a bad way, because I'm actually, I feel that I'm more aware, I'm more conscious of everything that's going on around me right now, and all these great things have happened to me. Psychedelics have gotten, they turned my path on alcoholism. They cured me of that overnight. It was one session. I snapped out of the session. I looked at the whiskey bottle in the room. I said, I'm done with you. And that was it. And I keep, like, people keep saying that, maybe, it's the devil's fruit, and the devil's very crafty, and giving you some great things here and there, and blah 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 blah. I'm like, none, like, I've gone down the dark roads too, psychedelics aren't all, you know, rainbows and great, great times. You know, there is some darkness you have to face, and you have to face it with courage. And, but those, facing those dark times the way I did actually makes me look at it more as like, you have to go through those dark, you know, you have to go through the dark to get to the light. And, you know, there's great things if you go through that darkness. You just have to endure it and have the courage to get through it and push through it.
So what are your recommendations then when it comes to trying psychedelics? I mean, is this something that I don't think it's as simple as everybody should do this, but at the same time, I'm going, look at these medical practitioners, look at the way things are changing, especially with psilocybin and LSD and microdosing. I mean, remarkable results, people getting out of depressive, just depression in general. All of a sudden they take LSD and boom. But because of the unpredictability that I was alluding to earlier, you know, is there a right time to do it? Is there a safe way to do it? I mean, what do you think?
Well, you know, I definitely wouldn't recommend, LSD to, especially like someone that I know nothing about. You know, I can't, I think that's one of the unique traps for LSD too, is that, you know, you do it and you have a great spiritual experience that just changes your way of thinking and changes your consciousness forever. And the first thing you want to do is like almost find it and give it away to as many people as you can.
Yes.
Because right. you think that they're going to have that same experience. And then you see that they don't. And then, you know, I started looking at that. I'm like, maybe this isn't a good idea, you know, the way to go. Maybe I shouldn't. Yeah. Maybe I should just like consider it a personal experience for me and not even, you know, recommend it to anybody around me. But I mean, if somebody was serious about making improvements down a spiritual path, I'd maybe recommend mushrooms to start right. with. I definitely wouldn't recommend LSD because that can go one way or the other, and it's very intense. It's hard to get anything right with LSD unless you're around somebody that's done it before and they can kind of talk you down those paths. It's like, if they start experiencing problems and you know that, you know, I've experienced darkness, so if, you know, that's going to be, you know, I can pick up on that and, you know, kind of help somebody away from that. But it would definitely, even then, it would have to be a one-on-one thing. It wouldn't be a group thing and we're just all going to have fun and trip our nuts off and,
yeah. Right. So then what do you, in terms of telling your story, and again, your podcast reminds me of what I want to get back to on this show. The early episodes that I used to do on Open Loops were not interviews at all. It was me talking about my wrestling with reality and these concepts of supernatural, paranormal, spiritual, esoteric, and talking about all that stuff. And then even doing book reviews and talking about courses I was studying. I mean, you do a lot of that and related to your experiences. You know, now that you've moved past the audiobook phase and you are talking, and I know you just have, you have a series about addiction you've been working on. You know, what are you happy? Are there principles that people can get from your story that aren't necessarily you need to do drugs to find peace and self-realization? And what do you hope those principles are?
Yeah. So I also, I'm doing a addiction series right now. And I'm actually covering like various things that I've dealt with. I mean, alcoholism's in there, but also like I just got done with one called, you know, sports supplements, and then being addicted to that, the idea of the image that you're portraying to other people.
Right.
Yeah. And that was a big thing for me. I encountered those image issues early on. And it kind of ties into, you know, the addiction to sports supplements for me. You know, I went from 135 to about 170 when I started working out. And then I started taking supplements to supposedly that, you know, helped me keep my stature and all this. And then I began to think, for some reason, that the only reason that I gained so much muscle and that I was actually a lot more durable than I was when I lived in Florida was because of these supplements. So I had to keep taking them. And it's kind of one of those moments too, is like people always saying, oh, you're, especially when women tell you that, oh, your muscles are so tight, your forearms are so strong, like blah, 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 blah. And you're like, oh, I got to keep taking those supplements because I want to keep hearing that. And, now I'm reaching the point where it's like, this is kind of getting ridiculous. It's like, you know what? I'm putting in enough hard work to where these supplements don't even matter because I got there without them to begin with. So, wanting to maintain certain images are definitely detrimental, I think, to everyone out there if we hold on to them too tightly. But
yeah, no, it seems as if you are, what I really like is that you are very, very open about your experiences and letting people know that they're nefarious ways that the mind can play tricks on you and bring you down. I think it's definitely people need to hear these stories from people, and people need to know there's a way out on the other side. So the fact that you're doing this show and going into really all of your demons is, I think, admirable. And I'm going, oh my gosh, he did a 6 section on addiction. He talked about the suicide story. I mean, how much, is there more? How much more of your life could be poured out into these episodes that you do?
So there's a interesting one that I had a lot of fun doing. It's called, No Play May. And I documented, the whole month of May I went without masturbating. And I logged that whole thing down, wrote every little idea that I had whenever I got home. Well, it was also the beginning of where everybody had masks on inside Walmarts or supermarkets and what have you.
Yeah.
So, the first 2 weeks of that were beyond anything I could have imagined as far as my anger level. And I actually had to tell my general manager at the time, I'm like, look, this is what's going on. I'm experiencing crazy anger. I never thought I was angry like this, but this is what's going on. So just bear with it while it passes. And then it became a thing of like, I'd go to a grocery store or Walmart or something. I'd see a girl with her mask on. And I was just thinking like such ridiculously nasty thoughts about what I wanted to do to her and how things would go in the bedroom and all this.
Right,
and,
right.
And then I think it was about maybe the 3-week mark, a little after 3 weeks. And then everything just went away and it was just like extreme calmness. And I actually felt really good not even thinking about it. And I said, okay, well, I don't even have to, I came to the conclusion, I'm like, you don't have to, share your sperm with the universe. It's okay if you don't jerk off. So, that was.
So that's it. Yeah, you are. This is what this show is. So, yeah. And by the way, everybody should definitely investigate some of the, I've talked about it on shows with people that are experts in sexuality, this idea of the no-fap movement and preserving sexual energy. And I mean, there's a lot to it. There's definitely a lot to it. But I it seems as if, yeah, you are what it is not that you found the God spark. It's that you're continuing to. You're looking at different ways. You're trying things out. You're on an explorative journey and documenting for people and giving people a sense of something greater inside of you. And ideally, that'll resonate with others. Is that where you're coming from with all this?
I'm definitely hoping that because when I'm 41 now, and I didn't really feel that ignition moment until like I did an episode called, 40 years old. This is just the beginning. And that's how it kind of feels. I feel like a kid again, just having zero cares about other people's opinions and
Yes.
just wanting to, I don't know. I feel like I got a lot of catching up to do as far as, I don't know. I feel like I've caged myself, so to speak, over a course of time, and now all bets are off. So.
Right. And of course, the other thing being that, maybe that's another attachment that you have, this idea that, and I'm just saying this for myself, this idea that even the belief that you have, quote unquote, catching up to do is in itself a false thing. It doesn't even matter. This was your journey up till now. That's what it was. You had a life. It was fine. Now you're in this phase. There is no regret. It's I say that just knowing, speaking to myself, I definitely feel that. I definitely feel that I have at times I've said, oh gosh, I wasted my 20s and I could have done this. And I have to keep reminding myself every day, Antonio, this is the journey. You would not be here doing this if those things hadn't happened. I don't know. I didn't mean to
Right.
go into coaching, but I'm just I from my perspective, I don't feel like you have any catching up to do. I'm just excited to see what you're going to do next.
Well, yeah, it was just it was a thought I had here and there, and then I'm like, you know what? Actually, you're exactly where you need to be at this current
Right.
moment because you're appreciating everything much more than you would have had you started this in your 20s or earlier. But yeah, I'm pretty happy and excited about the way things are going right now.
Yeah. Well, look, everybody needs to check out Finding the God Spark. We'll link to it. We'll also link to the Hand Pan Music YouTube channel so you can experience some. I'm very curious about this Sir Mix-a-Lot Baby Got Back cover.
Well, have you listened to that one yet?
I haven't actually listened to that one. I just noticed. Oh my gosh. That is hilarious. See, that is, yeah, that's the joy. That's the childlike joy. Who would do that on one of those?
It's definitely I've gotten the most positive feedback from that one. I've just gotten messages with like, the crying smiley face emojis and like, oh my God, this is too good.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. So then tell me this, and people, you're, and again, this is what's great. I've had people on this show that have been teaching their spiritual healing method for 30 years. And then I've had people like you who are definitely a few steps of me in terms of psychedelic exploration. I have never done any form of psychedelic before, but also I would say you're a few steps ahead of someone that might be listening to this and is feeling bummed out about life and hasn't found the God spark on the other side. So I love having people from all levels of different perspective out there. You mentioned the description of your show is to figure out the puzzle of self-realization. So far, what have you figured out about self-realization that people can take away from your experiences?
I would say we're definitely all a lot better than we give ourselves credit for. And we're definitely better than what other people give ourselves credit for. And I think the hard thing, pretty much the hardest thing, would be, if I guess I get, I guess I can say it like this. Like when I was a kid and I was drawing, even my closest family would say, "Oh, you didn't draw that. Prove it to us. Draw it in front of us." They never gave me any support. And I think that's one way you can look at it, is like, if something gives you joy, stop taking others' opinions into consideration for any of it. You draw, that brings you happiness. You think you're good at it, have that be enough. Stop looking for other people's approval, especially family members. That family can be some of the harshest. I don't know why that is, but they can be some of the most unsupportive people around.
Right. The internal, going inside, the strength of going inside, whether it's drugs that do it, whether it's, I mean, it's a great way of like really going deep in. But yeah, you don't even need that. To regularly give yourself credit for the things, to acknowledge what you enjoy without needing anyone on the outside. It sounds as if that in itself can be a huge key towards self-realization.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. You make a lot of sense. I definitely have enjoyed this conversation. I think it's very awesome that you're putting all this stuff out there. And again, the other thing is, if you don't want to listen to long conversations like this, this may have been the longest podcast you have ever recorded, just because I got you there going for a while, but I appreciate it. Your show is very palatable. It's 8 to sometimes less than 8 minute chunks, but you're still giving away the good stuff there. So I highly recommend checking it out. This has been, I feel, oh man, I had one more question, but now I forget it. Tell me this, when you go into a new experience with drugs or abstaining from a certain act, whether it, maybe it's even fasting, or breath work, is there a part of God that you want to experience that you haven't yet? Do you feel like there's more inside you that you're looking to have? I mean, that's the thing, right? Because, and here's why I'm asking. Sometimes people have one trip and it changes their lives forever. I've never understood what is it when you're in an elevated place and you say, well, I'm going to do ayahuasca again. My fear is always, oh gosh, is it going to reverse the effect, or is it going to not be as good as that first time? I mean, what is your mindset as you go forth into the spiritual realm to get to know yourself more?
So I think one of the big things that I've experienced would be the idea of, sacrifice and kind of proving to the divine world that you are serious about a task or serious about some changes that you want to make, and you've been struggling with, and I really want to make these changes, and you got to show that you're committed and serious about it. Back to when I first started dealing with encountering that image was an issue for me. I was big into, the cowboy bars, being in that, rough and tough cowboy type of image. And the first difficult one was coming home and thinking, I was on LSD at the time, and I'm like, okay, I'm home. I'm just gonna sit in the darkness and meditate and see what thoughts I get. And as soon as I turned off the light, I was dogpiled by all these cowboy figures, and they were smoking cigars and blowing smoke in my face, and it all felt so real. It just felt like, I could feel the, the breath of these guys breathing in my face. And so that was my first encounter with image, and it was to get rid of it. Like, I went down this train of thought. I was like, well, to get rid of this, you have to show that you're serious and make a sacrifice. And I opened my eyes, and my eyes went right on my favorite shirt that I would wear to bars. And there's no shirt that looked that good on me ever. And I really loved it. And my eyes went to that shirt immediately. And then I heard this booming voice, "Sacrifice accepted." And I said, okay, well, I have to show that I'm serious, I guess. So that shirt, I'm going to dance in it one more time. I'm going to go to the bar with it once more. Then when I get home, I'm going to throw it in the corner, and I'm going to plan out a good time to just burn it in a fire. And I ended up doing that. And that was one of the, it was kind of like I almost felt rejuvenated after, burning it. Cause it was like, yeah, I just, did something that I felt I needed to do to show that I was serious. And now I can actually progress and move on to something else that I need to work on.
Yes. Oh, you know what? Now I'm getting the answer. It all makes sense. What you said earlier about your spirituality is much less about having this structural, rigid system that you follow. You're moving, you're much more in tune with the present, it sounds like. It sounds like if you're going to, you're not just going to do ayahuasca to have the high and the experience again. And oh, I hope I have a spiritual time again because it was so fun. It's, you notice a new thing in your life that might be holding you back, something you want to let go. There's a new commitment you want to make, and you're guided step by step, moment by moment to make it, which, again, I think that's part of the God spark. The God spark isn't so far down the road. It's much closer than people realize. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, I'm a firm believer that it's inside you, and that's the journey, is to find it, unlock it, and just kind of go with it, go wherever it takes you. Like, I was a stubborn child for most of my life, just kind of messing around and all that. And I remember actually when I started playing the handpan instrument, and it was LSD experience that I had there, and I got done playing, and it was, as though I was an angel. There were like wings sprouting out from my back, and it was almost like I was playing this music for God at his throne. And I snapped out of that for a second. I'm like just in tears and saying, I'm so sorry that it's taken me this long to actually admit 100% that you exist and that I believe in you. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And, I just got this calming kind of response that it's okay. It was inevitable that you'd be at this moment. And I knew it all along. He knew it all along. So,
amazing. Antonio DeCunto, host of Finding the God Spark. Fascinating story. I appreciate you being as vulnerable with me and with the public about this. And I'm curious to see how much What you create next, really, because that's the spirit of the divine in all of us, that creative energy, and I definitely feel it arising through you. So I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your journey.
Well, thanks for having me. And I do I have some very interesting things planned for this year. I don't know if anybody was paying attention. There was a change kind of like how I was approaching posting on Instagram and whatnot. And that all kind of goes.
Oh, yeah. Follow his Instagram. It's interesting.
I'm definitely planning some interesting things coming this year. So
absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see where you go next. Hey, thanks, Antonio. Appreciate it. Antonio D. Cunto. Okay, so I guess I did say the name on the show, but sometimes he puts himself out there just as Antonio D. So it's tough to know. I think this show it's part of the self-realization. You go from abbreviated, mysterious alias last name to Antonio D. Cunto. Yes. You check out this watch I'm wearing. It's a De Cunto. Sounds like that, huh? All right. I want to thank Antonio for coming on the show. I want to thank Ronnie McGilvery for the theme music. And I want to thank you for listening. Take care. From Greg B.